Thanks for tuning in to the Life in the Front Office podcast presented by Suja Organic, where we inspire, educate, and provide advice and insights around those who are in the sports business and entertainment industry. Please follow us on LinkedIn and Instagram at Life in the Front Office. And don't forget to follow and subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts. Lastly, get your 15% off Suja at sujaorganic.com with the code LIFO, L-I-F-O. And enjoy today's episode. Welcome to today's episode on the Life in the Front Office podcast presented by Suja Organic. Excited for today's episode on the Clubhouse Industry Insights series with our guest and Tom Grossinger, Director of Business Development at Kroenke Sports and Entertainment. We'll get into a little bit of his career path, how he got there, what he's doing now, some of the differences between ticket sales, premium sales, and partnerships. A little bit about technology within the space as a whole. But nonetheless, Tom, welcome.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
You know, as we were talking before the podcast started, you had mentioned, hey, I've got a ring with the Cubs. I've got a ring with the Nuggets, ring with the Avs. I'm like, three rings in, you know, the span of what, 12, 13 years, I think you've had your career thus far. Like most people don't even get a chance to go to the playoffs and you've got three rings. So what's behind all that? A little luck?
It's all my hard work on the court, on the ice, on the baseball diamond. You know, really, I can't thank myself enough for all these championships. No, it's been 100% right place, right time. It's been the ability to work for some amazing organizations. But I will say that I, especially in this organization, get to stay humble. There's a woman who heads up our creative team who sits on my floor here, who is on her 10th ring at this point. So really, I've got a long way to go in order to build the career that everyone else has.
10 rings. Oh, yes. My goodness. Well, she's not going to have enough fingers for the next one. So I don't know. Yeah. Well, look, as you think about your career path, where you started with the Yankees and then to the Cubs and on location, we'll get into what that is, and then now Kroenke. What got you into sports from the start, and how did you decide, yeah, I'm going to go do ticket sales for the Yankees? They're like the one club that you probably don't need a whole lot of ticket sales people, right?
You would imagine. And then you could see what was going on in New York in 2011, post, you know, financial crash, post new stadium and ticket prices being as high as they were priced out before that financial crash. There was a lot to be sold and a lot to be done. I think from a pathway perspective, I always knew that I wanted to be involved in sports. I wanted to be involved in something that I was passionate about. It was just figuring out where in there I wanted to be. So as people think about where their careers should take them, I cannot recommend enough taking internships that are going to give you experience across multiple functions. My first internship was with a now defunct independent league baseball team. You know, they owed like $2 million to the city. That's why they got shut down. But I got to do, you know, there were four full-time employees and 18 unpaid interns. I ran the box office. I ran the press box. I de-weeded the warning track. I did group sales. I did all of those sorts of things. And then I went and interned for the Chicago Sky of the WNBA and had a chance to get into the ticket sales and corporate partnership side of things and really, really fell in love with it. These are not things that I ever thought that I would love, but doing them, I really found a passion for them. And that's what led me to going into inside sales. So as people think about their careers, don't poo-poo anything until you've tried it and give yourself the opportunity to try those things so you can figure out what works for you.
I love that. And also just, you know, figuring out what you don't like as well, right? And totally. Kind of going, okay, this part of the industry is probably not for me. But, you know, when we talk about ticket sales, it's not just selling. There's a whole service side to it. And so as, you know, someone's listening and they go, well, I don't want to do 100 calls a day and, you know, blah, blah, blah. It's like, no, you can go on the ticket sales side and, you know, have a roster of clients, you know, and people that you're dealing with, season ticket members, whatever the case is. So talk a little bit about the split between sales and service, maybe how some different organizations that you've been in go about it, right? I know sometimes that can be different as well, in terms of how it's organized.
Yeah, I think that there's sort of multiple cross sectionals within a ticketing organization. There is your standard ticket sales and service, which are going to deal with your standard season ticket members and partial plan members and things of that nature. On the ticket sales side, it's a lot of calling, outreach, building relationships, setting up meetings, getting people interested in the packages that you're offering. And that's what I think a lot of people are sort of concerned about. They don't want to be Danny DeVito from Matilda. They don't want to be the used car salesman. But I don't think that that is actually what the job is. What people don't understand from a ticket sales perspective is it's going out, finding people that are coming out to your games and understanding them, understanding what their needs are, and going and helping them find a solve from there. The ticket service side is going to be really, really focused on your people that are already members, people that have season tickets, that have partial plans, helping them with their day-to-day, helping them manage their ticketing accounts, getting the benefits that are a part of being a season ticket member, access to events, getting them the swag items that everybody always loves, but also delivering, from a service perspective, really high-end experiences that people are never going to forget. How can you create a wow moment for these people that are really, really loyal to your club? And that's on the standard side. And then you flip it up one level and you have premium sales and premium service. So premium sales is dealing with high net worth individuals and it's dealing with companies, it's dealing with executives. I moved to the premium sales side with the Cubs. I was 23, 24 years old. And the thing that I loved about that role is that I got to go in and sit down with business leaders throughout Chicago, C-level executives, people that were running the, local presidents of banks, people that were CEOs of companies. And I got to get FaceTime with them. I got to see how they ticked, see how they think. That was an amazing part of that job. And that's where premium sales is really going to differentiate from ticket sales, is it's all about building those C-level relationships. And then premium service is just taking all the things that we just talked about with ticket service and amplifying it a little bit more. How can you deliver value to your season ticket members that are companies? How can you deliver value to the people that can get whatever they want, right? How do you give something to the person that can buy anything that they so choose? And that's what premium service is about. It's about dealing in those really high-end events, dealing in those really high-end gifts and trips and things like that. So there's a lot of different phases to ticketing. I haven't even gotten into group ticket sales. We can do that some other time. But I think that I don't want people to paint this sort of ticketing industry with one broad stroke. There's so many different things within there that they could be doing.
And then even within the ticketing space, right, there is, again, depending on what organization you're in, there's some people who are on the analytics side where they're managing the CRM system and, the technology side of things, or now that there's AI bots involved in terms of selling tickets and organizations are experimenting with that. Talk a little bit about the technology that's being used, again, just from the consumer experience purchasing side of things, right? Like where they're going to purchase, how they're going to purchase, the efficiencies, the effectiveness, the use of data, right, to be able to go after leads that maybe came last season, but they haven't purchased anything this year. Whatever the case is, like you can really start to create campaigns around using past purchasing, data to be able to, target the right fan.
Yeah, I think that a lot of what we are changing about our tech stacks, about our strategy, comes down to meeting people where they are. And that is ever evolving, right? It is changing constantly. When I first started in this industry, these 4,000 years ago, it was all phone calls. It was get people on the phone. That's where you're going to be able to reach them. That's no longer true. The read rate on an email at this point, probably between 10 and 20%. The read rate on a text message, 98%. So we are implementing technologies for people to sign up for last minute ticket offers through text messages so they can get a text. Hey, do you want to come to the game tomorrow? There's still tickets available. We are using sort of chatbot style email technology to get emails out, get people to raise their hands and go, hey, I'm actually interested in learning more. And then you bring a rep into that sort of conversation. So it's more of a warm lead as opposed to a cold lead. We have any number of technologies that we are using to try and find correct contact information for people so that when we identify somebody, a company that we should be working with, we're able to not just call into the main line of the company and go through, you know, the phone tree to get to them. We have their email address, we have their phone number. And then the last thing is, I think that for a long period of time, sports really lagged in terms of e-commerce. There was the ability to buy single game tickets, yes. But other than that, that's sort of where it ended. Now you can buy a Tesla online. You can buy a Tesla from your phone if you wanted to. So having premium products that you can now purchase online, having private spaces that you can purchase online, having the ability for people to even in some instances, in some teams are starting to sell their season tickets online. That is all where we are going for the future. People don't want to talk to people as much anymore. Some of the data that you'll see for some of these premium purchases, the amount of them that are happening at like 2 in the morning would blow your mind. So it's all about sort of knocking down those barriers to entry. If somebody wants to buy at 2 in the morning, why make them fill out a form and then get a phone call 16 hours later? And then they're playing phone tag and then they're talking about price. No. They're ready to buy, let them do it. That's where we are going in the future.
It's so interesting to talk about the consumer purchase habits, right? It's like, hey, if you're at work and you're, you know, you got a long day and you don't have time to do anything until you get home and then it's late at night and you're figuring it out. I mean, those are the times where there's no reps in the office, right? So to your point, it's how do you maximize the 24 hours in a day while also still providing customer service where you can and where you need it, but being more effective and efficient, you know, with the sales process as a whole and probably speeding it up a little bit, right? If you make a playoff run and you've got a window that's shortened, right, there's less, you know, sales time. And the solution isn't just hire more salespeople.
No.
Right. I think that sometimes is a misconception where it's like, oh, just hire more people. Well, not really, right?
No. And I think that there is there's something to be said about finding the people that you couldn't find yourself, right? A salesperson is going to go through, our salespeople all use the same technology in the same places that they look for leads. They're all fishing in the same ponds. I learned this, you know, we talked about my time at NFL on location with the Super Bowl. Is there would be people that I would sell to, they would buy $180,000 worth of tickets for the Super Bowl. Hey, put it on my credit card. I'm happy to just get this thing done. And I would try to reverse engineer how I would have found them on my own, right? They'd be referrals from somebody, somebody would have passed them over to me, whatever that is. And I would have never been able to, because fishing in the ponds that I normally fish in, I could not have found them. So you can create more salespeople that are all fishing in the same ponds, but there's so many different areas that buyers lie in that you're missing out on. I think about the fact that like every now and again, I'll be sitting, you know, ready to go to bed. And I'll think, you know what? I told my wife I was going to buy some laundry detergent. I'm going to hop on Amazon. I'm going to order the laundry detergent, get it done. For high net worth individuals, for companies, buying a suite for a night, about the same thing as me buying laundry detergent. So yeah, they may just do that at 2 in the morning.
I love that analogy. I might have to create an analogy out of like the, okay, well, how many ponds are you really fishing in? And then is anybody in the lake or the river or right?
Yeah. Like, creeks, streams, where are you? You know?
Totally. But to your point, right? Like how do you diversify the buckets of places that you're, you know, looking in for those individuals? And if technology helps you get there, you know, to your point about the text messaging and right, because there's only so many people you can hit in a 24 hour window, let alone the, you know, typical 9 to 5 window of you know, people working, right? Because you might work longer hours, but the other people are commuting home. They're not paying attention to their email. They're not right. Like you might be able to work longer, but you're not going to get to the people at that time. So I think it's really fascinating just where it's going as a whole. And I'd be curious to know, like, on the premium front, is there a world in which it's all online, right? It's just, hey, because there's dynamic pricing and you know, you have availabilities and technology that algorithms that can probably just run the whole thing. I mean, at what point does the sales side, you know, to your point of fishing in the right ponds, not everybody has the ability or wants to go online to purchase.
I don't think there will ever be a point where it goes all online. And this is my pitch to not replace me with AI. This is my pitch right here. But I think that there is going to be a time where we're able to move everything to being online. But in that, you know, even still with some of the tech that is in place for people to do things like buy suites online, what you find is any number of those people still want to call in. I saw things online, but I want to clarify. I want to talk to somebody. I want to understand if I'm making the right decision for me. Could you walk me through what that is like? And at that point, you need a salesperson to pick up on what they are saying and, you know, talk to them through what that product is and potentially upsell them. What technology is never going to be able to do is really upsell somebody from the thing that they weren't asking about originally. It's going to be able to reflect you back to you. So if you go, I want a 10 game plan, it's going to go, here's a 10 game plan. What it's not going to be
Right.
able to say is, it really sounds like you want a 20 game plan. Let's help you get into that. So there's always going to be a place for the salesperson. Please don't replace me with AI, at least anytime soon.
I love it. I love it. Look, you got into the partnership side a little bit. Would love for you to kind of just dive into, hey, if you're someone listening to this, you've done ticket sales, you've done premium sales. I'll give you an example. I had someone who's a colleague in the industry who said, hey, I listened to an episode from someone in the partnership space. I was selling premium at XYZ place, and that episode allowed me to understand that I actually really wanted to get into partnerships. And then they did. And I was like, that's really cool. But with that all said, if you're someone who's in ticketing or premium and they see someone in partnerships and they're like, how do I get into that? Or if they're in ticketing, how do they get into premium? Where are the levels that, again, you manage a team. Like, how are you trying to help your people matriculate through organization?
Yeah, we're really lucky. Our top salesperson actually just left our department to go into corporate partnerships with our organization. So this is the thing that we have very recently gone through. It has started with making sure that our reps are not shying away from those conversations. If you are talking to businesses about hospitality, which is what we are doing on the premium sales side, eventually somebody's going to come to you and say, I also want to talk to you about our marketing spend. I also want to talk to you about how we can get advertising throughout the arena. Don't shy away from those conversations. Talk to them about what their goals are. Get an understanding of what they're trying to accomplish. Then bring it to our corporate partnerships team and work in tandem with them on those conversations. And getting that on the ground in the field experience has been a game changer for our team. What is corporate partnerships in comparison to that ticket sales and in comparison to that hospitality? Is it's a much broader focus on how you can help a company. It is how can they truly be a partner of our organization? Part of it is going to be hospitality, right? If you are working with a local company to do advertising, they're going to want tickets, they're going to want suites, they're going to want all those other things. But how can you help them get their brand? So you're helping not just the company, but the brand itself. How can you get that brand in front of the right consumers and in the right ways? And then how can you get them to accomplish what their goals are overarchingly as a company? Not just, hey, I want to help out clients or I want to help out our employees. What are all of your goals? And how can we accomplish them through what we have going on here? And then finally, I think one of the things that has changed over the last 15, 20 years is going from sponsorships to partnerships. Sponsorships is just having your ads up in a building. Partnerships is about how can we as two organizations help each other? If you are going to be the bank that is on all of our signage, how can we also do our banking with you? If you are going to be a security app, how can we also use your security app as an arena? I think a great example is out here. Ball Arena is obviously the name of our arena. Ball Corp is our naming rights partner. We use Ball aluminum cups everywhere in our building, right? We have really adopted their sustainability message. That's how you make that relationship that much deeper. So, for people that are interested in getting into corporate partnerships or understanding it, It is about having a much deeper and much more profound understanding of the companies and brands that you are working with.
Oh, I love that example. As you think about the industry and where it's going, and you're even sitting in the seat where you have access to multiple properties, right? As opposed to, hey, I'm just selling the Yankees or I'm just selling the Cubs. And you've got the ability to not only sell cross property, but really all year round because of where the seasons overlap. What's been the biggest difference of selling in an organization that has that versus just going through the seasonal cycle with that one property?
Less sleep, bigger bags under my eyes. No, I think that generally it allows you to truly be more full menu and more consultative in your approach. What I think ends up happening a lot with especially young salespeople who work for one team, they go into a B2B meeting and they think, I'm going to be the best consultant ever. And what they end up actually doing is trying to count in baseball to 81. How can I count to 81 games? Oh, so you said you have 60 employees and 21 really impactful clients. Well, take all of your 21 impactful clients out to a game and take all of your 60 employees. And now I've done 81 games. And of course, my team is the perfect team for you in XYZ reasons. With the four teams that we have in Denver, with concerts that we have going on, with all of the different types of products that we have, it allows us to go in and say, hey, listen, I think you were leaning in this direction, but you said this about who your employees are. You said this about who your clients are. You said this about what you're trying to accomplish. I actually think you said X, Y is the correct solution for you. And it allows us over time to build people into much, much bigger packages. A lot of what we are trying to accomplish on a day-to-day is cross-selling and upselling people. You have the abs. How can we get you into the Nuggets? You have the abs and the Nuggets. How can we get you to do the Mammoth and the Rapids? So it allows for those, I think, much more, consultative conversations, and we're able to go from there.
As we start to wrap up the episode, I'm thinking, I wonder what Tom thinks is the hardest thing about sales.
I think the hardest thing about sales is not getting tunnel visioned at any given point and really getting process focused as opposed to results focused. This is the hardest thing that I see with my reps. And like, this was really hard when I was in corporate partnerships, because when you're in corporate partnerships, you're closing like five deals a year, right? The hardest thing is seeing the sales chain starting to go off. Somebody sold four seats. Somebody else sold two seats. Somebody else sold two seats. And you're sitting there and you're going, I just want to do that, right? I want to sell those. I want to be able to be on the board. I want to feel better. Somebody just passed me. And then you start skipping steps in your process. Well, I can call that person and try and get them in on something quick to make me feel better. The people that are the most process focused have the best long-term results. But being process focused doesn't necessarily get you the best short-term results. So it's really difficult in that regard to sort of silence your own inner critic and your own drive to get something done immediately.
What was the biggest misconception before you got into the industry where you were like, before you took that first job or the internship or whatever the case might have been, what was your biggest misconception on sales that now that you've been in it for a while, you're like, oh, that wasn't true at all?
I'm going to do you one better. I'm going to give you a misconception that I had about sales that ended up being true and is just no
Oh,
longer true, which
interesting.
is I think that the sort of boiler room style selling, like, when I first got into sales, it was like, you better watch Glengarry Glen Ross, because you're going to hear Alec Baldwin talk about like, put the coffee down, coffee's for closers sort of stuff. And some of the initial cultures I was a part of were very Shark Week every week, right? If you're not top dog, you should probably get fired. And all these very intense style of selling cultures was the thing I was most afraid of, and was the thing that was a little bit true 10 years ago in this industry. It's not true anymore. I think more and more everybody understands that if you want people to work for you for a long time and stay here and be really good teammates and really good coworkers and really good salespeople, you have to meet them where they are. There has to be more of a work-life balance. You have to accept that different people sell in different ways, and you cannot create a culture of fear or ultra high intensity. And so that has been a big shift in the industry. And I think that is a current misconception about what it still is, and it just isn't anymore.
Really interesting. And as you think about where that goes, right, from a culture perspective and how you manage people, like what's the biggest thing that you've learned managing a team as opposed to when you were the individual contributor being managed?
I think it goes back to a lot of the things that we've talked about, which is being process focused and making the big things the big things. I've told this story before to any number of people, but sort of my moment of really truly having to take a step back and look inwards was I used to have call numbers on our staff. Hey, you have to hit a certain number of calls in a day. And I ran into one of our reps at the end of the day. We're walking to our car. I was like, "How's your day today?" And he goes, "Great, I made my 55 calls for the day." It's not really the point of anything. The call is a means to an end. You can't say that you had a good day just because you made a bunch of calls. And I realized that we weren't putting our big things first. The big things, first and foremost, are revenue. Below that is, do you have the pipeline? Are you building a pipeline in order to generate the revenue that you need? Beyond that is, are you having enough meetings to generate the pipeline in order to generate the revenue? And then we get to, are you making enough calls, emails, texts in order to generate the meetings, in order to generate the pipeline, in order to generate the revenue? But if you focus too much on calls, 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 people start seeing calls as an end as opposed to a means. So we really, really try to focus on those ends as opposed to the other pieces in terms of how we are judging, engaging on a day-to-day basis.
Super insightful. All right, you ready for rapid fire?
Rapid fire, hit me.
All right. Do you remember your first sale?
I do.
What was
Oh,
it?
you want me to talk about it? It
A little
was
bit. Yeah. Yeah. But what was the first sale?
a party suite when I was with the Yankees. It was a company that I had cold called. They were looking to do an employee outing, and we did like 100% outing for them in a suite for a Yankees game.
Very cool. Stadium you haven't been to or arena that you want to go see an event at.
PNC Park, Pittsburgh.
Ooh, great skyline.
Yeah,
Very, very cool
exactly.
atmosphere. If there is an event that you've been to that's been your favorite, what was it?
Game 7, 2016 World Series. You can't beat the Game 7.
That was a given. You were going to mention
You walked right into that one.
one of the ring winning
Yeah, yeah,
games.
yeah.
Okay, you walk into any arena, could be yours. What are you eating?
I think that I am this originally a baseball guy, so I'm walking in, I'm getting a hot dog and a beer.
Okay, there you go. No peanuts.
The peanuts come later, but you got to start off with the hot dog and the beer. Then you have the peanuts, you get salty, and then you get thirsty, and then you have your second beer.
There you
That's
go.
how you roll.
If there is a sport you could play professionally, what would it be?
Oh man, if I could play any sport professionally, I'd be a backup quarterback.
That's the best role. You get paid and you don't get hit, right? I mean,
Yeah,
that's
please don't hit me, but please pay me.
and I'll watch the touchdowns or the interceptions being thrown, and it won't impact my day.
I'll wear a headset. I'll cheer you on. I'll do all the things.
All right, last one for you. If you are going to buy any sort of experience for an event, a game, who are you bringing? What is it? Where are you going?
Any experience for
Money
any
money doesn't matter.
money doesn't matter. I've been thinking a lot about I was a high school and college swimmer. I've been already thinking a lot about how I can get out to LA for the 2028 Olympics to watch swimming. I will bring my wife and my son, of course.
Yeah.
But I'm really starting to think about how I can get myself out to watch some Olympic swimming. That's on the bucket list that I haven't been to.
Interesting. I like that answer. Okay, one more for you. Follow up on this swimming in college.
Sure.
What was the favorite stroke?
I was 100 and 200 breaststroker. I held the Colorado College records from 2013, and in my mind, or not 2013, 2008, and in my mind, they haven't been broken, so don't look it up.
If you couldn't swim breaststroke, what would you have to do? You
I would have
freestyle?
done better. I mean, yeah, if I couldn't swim breaststroke, I would have swum one of the other strokes or maybe quit. I mean, who's to say?
I the best was when I was working at Purdue. I went to go do a couple swim workouts in the pool, and you do the freestyle, and you time yourself, right?
Yeah.
And then they've got the records up on the wall, and you go, wait, that they took half the amount of time I just did? How's that possible?
The thing that bums me, I mean, one of the amazing things about swimming is it just keeps getting faster and faster and faster and faster.
Yeah.
So every now and again, I check in on the times that people are going, I go, they did what? So even I do that if it makes you feel any better.
Incredible. Well, Tom, really appreciate all the advice, insights, perspectives you shared today. It's been awesome. You're welcome on anytime, and hopefully there's another ring in the future there for you here soon.
How about two of them? Yeah, we'll take two. We'll take two in June, but I appreciate it, Jake. Thanks for the time.
Hey everyone, thanks for listening to today's episode. And I just want to give a quick shout out to ScreenSkins, our presenting sponsor of the Teamwork Online webinar series, the number one branded screen protector that allows you to personalize your screen protector for custom or officially licensed designs that disappear. Get yours today by visiting screenskins.com and use the code LIFO24 at checkout for 20% off today. LIFO24 at screenskins.com at checkout for 20% off. Thanks, everyone.